Welcome back to The Counter Narrative, the podcast where we dive deep into the story, shaping our world and empower voices making a difference. I am Rehanot Ojoba, and with me is the incredible Tiara Oluwafade.
Hi Rehanot, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? Happy New Year, by the way.
Oh yes, Happy New Year. Welcome to our wonderful listeners. Today, we're incredibly honored to host Rewa, a dynamic force in both the finance and visual arts sectors. With 15 years of experience spanning Western and African markets and a celebrated artistic career, Rewa has made significant impact in both fields.
Rewa's heritage-inspired art has been showcased globally, and she's a leader in the finance world as a director at Chapel Hill Denham and a business coach for the Female Founders Group program, Rewa. Rewa, welcome to the show.
Hi Rewa, could you dispel some common myths about women and financial literacy or independence?
Sure. So the first myth, I think, in the domestic sense, is that women who are financially empowered are considered or perceived to be less wifely or wifey. Wifely, I think, is the word. And, you know, because people think if they have knowledge and they may talk back to their husbands, etc., they may not be as domestic. But I don't think that's true. I think that it just means that they are more of an asset to their partners. The second myth, I think, in the financial services space where, you know, I occupy, is that, you know, women are less able than men, perhaps, to understand complex, you know, financial concepts or to run a business or to head up divisions. And again, I think this is a terrible misconception. So that's both in the domestic space now and, you know, as I've just mentioned, in the more sort of corporate space.
I think you're just very insecure for you to say that if your wife has more money or more degree, she's going to be less wifey. I do not think that word should even exist.
Yes. And also the part where you mentioned about how there's no difference between if a male and a female grasp of financial terms. And so, yes, it's also because people feel, oh, yeah, you're a woman. There's this thing they say, like, oh, you're a woman, you have a smaller brain, so you cannot take all of these things. But when you look research, look at studies, you see that intelligence is not gender biased. Like, it literally comes to anybody. So it's all the myths and all of that. Yes.
And that's why we had a conversation about someone saying that a woman cannot fly a man, because this a man and a woman has gotten the same education, but you think that a man is a capable pilot, but a woman is
not. Yes, there was that conversation. It was very.
Anyways, away from all that, so you initiated a Pink Room project. What inspired this venture, and what future developments are in store?
So, the reason I started the Pink Room was because, like I said, I wanted to ensure that the women who were around me or chose to be, you know, to come and learn, would be just as empowered as I am. I've been working since I was 16 and I haven't stopped since, and it's been largely to my benefit. And so I wanted to impart some of that knowledge, you know, to my friends and to other women, because, you know, I think there's a saying, and I'm just paraphrasing here, that when a woman has a dollar, a whole village benefits, as opposed to when a man has a dollar, then he benefits, or the local bar might benefit, you know. So I thought it was important to disseminate the knowledge that I've accumulated over the years and, you know, uplift other women, because when a woman is uplifted, her community largely benefits from that empowerment. And in terms of what you can expect, you know, so the Pink Room just has quarterly forums, and it's open to all, a free event where I speak about macroeconomic events and how this impacts you directly. Because, you know, people often hear these headline numbers. Oh, okay, Cardoso and the CBN have increased MPR, you know, by 400 basis points. And what does that mean for you? Most people don't really know. So The thing with the Pink Room, it's fun, it's bite-sized chunks of knowledge, and I talk about how these headline macroeconomic data, how they directly impact you as an individual or your family or your business.
Fantastic. That's a wonderful initiative. So you work in Chapel Hill, Denham, where women account for 50% of the employees and 40% leadership positions in the company. How's that like? How does that feel? And does it make you feel like women can have financial independence and also have a good home?
So I think it's good because for the younger ladies in the company, they see what is possible and permissible for them. So I think, you know, they see women MDs, women directors, you know, just women in positions of leadership. They see that, okay, for them it's possible too. So I think it's good for that reason. What's it called? Sort of role modeling. It's good for role modeling for younger women. And then I think, you know, in a wider sense for the company, it's also very good, not PR. PR is maybe the wrong word, but it sends the right message. You know, obviously Chapel Hill Denham is a foremost investment bank in Nigeria, a foremost leading independent bank in Nigeria. And I think we wouldn't be where we are if we didn't have the staff complement that we do, because I think men bring something to the table, women bring a different nuance to something to the table. So I think that that harmony works very well. And, you know, we sort of see it in how we operate. My boss, Mr. Balaji Balogun, he's very good like that. He's always been a sort of key promoter of women in the workspace, you know, just championing the cause of women, you know, women entrepreneurs, women leaders, or just, you know, even junior women who are trying to make a way for themselves. So I really do admire him for that.
That's wonderful, you know, because a lot of companies have, like, generally in the world, we know that, oh, we have lesser women in leadership positions. Even in companies, you see that there's a difference, there's a stark, when you check the ratio between the male and female employees, there's a stark difference between. So it's nice and refreshing to hear from someone who works in a company where, okay, it's a bit balanced. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, he's very intentional. Chapel Hill Denham is very intentional about the gender complement, which is an amazing thing.
Fantastic. So Riwa, tell us, what are some frequent financial missteps women make, and how can our listeners stay clear of them?
Oh God, so many. I, you know, and I think we're all guilty of that. So for the last Pink Room, I sent out a survey, and, you know, some of the questions were a bit personal, you know, like sort of what do you earn? You know, how old are you? Do you have savings for retirement? But the two key questions I asked was, okay, do you currently have any savings, whether for retirement or other? And the majority of the women said no. The second question was, what is your retirement plan? And I was a bit cheeky about the answers. I put my children, I put my husband, and then I put, you know, my job and other business. And majority of the women, you know, because I could see the correlation, who had selected sort of no savings, had selected their husbands as their retirement plan. For their emergency fund, again, it was the same sort of thing, but obviously without the children answer. So what is your emergency fund? And for some of them, they had said, okay, the options were my parents, my employer, my church, and then I put my spouse. And majority of the women, again, selected their spouse as their emergency savings fund. And so I think that is a really huge pitfall. You know, how can you be empowered if something major happens in your life and you need emergency money? You're having to go and beseech somebody. And yes, you may be one of the fortunate women who has an understanding husband, a kind husband, a generous husband, who will help you out or help your family out. But, you know, sometimes that's not the case, and men will use this to, you know, to abuse their positions. So I think it's a huge misconception, you know, certainly that married women make, that they feel, okay, because I'm married now, my husband should take care of everything. And yes, he should take care of you and your children, but you should also be prudent in the way that you manage your own personal affairs to ensure that in the event of his demise, or if something happens, anything can happen, you're able to care for yourself as well as your children. And this is not just for emergency funds, and not just for retirement funds, but just, you know, just in general.
Are there more? So we're talking about having an emergency fund. Now, are there other mistakes women make when it comes to financial independence?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of them will give all their salaries to their husband. I'm like, what? What are you doing? I think they say, oh, my husband will handle this. Oh, I'm not thinking about, you know, they don't query the matrimonial source of funds. They don't query how the money is entering the household, how the money is being made. They don't query whether there's enough, you know, whether their children, there's savings for their children's education. They don't raise questions because they just think, oh, my husband's the breadwinner, he's going to handle this, and it's nothing to do with me. And I think that that's a really dangerous place to be, and it's a slippery slope as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. You know, we had a conversation about this giving your salary to your husband thing on Twitter like some weeks ago, and it was like, oh yeah, some people felt that it was a normal thing, but we were of the opinion that it was something about financial abuse. Yes. Because when you give all your salary to somebody, you do not have access to it. If you ever need, if something happens and you ever need to leave, you have to go back to the person you gave it to take it. So it's basically like a circle. You cannot escape abuse if you're so so thank you very much for the answer.
Especially if you're not sure of the partner's kindness, or maybe it's when they have the money to change, and maybe they would never change, but it's just risky to put all of your earnings in the hands of another person.
You don't want to be in that position. You know, you need to have FU money, right? I'm not allowed to swear on this, but I think you get my meaning. You need to have FU money. So if a situation is terrible, it's you know, endangering you, you need to have a form of escape. And how are you going to do that if you're financially living under somebody's thumb?
Yes, that makes sense. So I'm going to take you back to the question I asked before about the gender equality rating at Chapel Ildenham. So you mentioned that Chapel Ildenham is the foremost investment banking organization in Nigeria. So do you think that the gender parity that you have in the company is part of the reasons for this? Because when we had a conversation with Ben Weber, who is the CEO of Humanis, he does like a thing where he checks gender characteristics or how people behave in companies when it comes to like gender analog. And he mentioned something to us during our conversation. He said that companies that are dedicated to having gender equality. They tend to make more money. They tend to be better at what they're doing. So do you think this is part of the reasons why Chapel Ildenham is the foremost, really?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think McKinsey had a report a little while ago that looked at sort of the top companies in you know, North America, and they found that, you know, the companies that were in the top quartile in terms of revenues, you know, where they had more than 25% of women sitting on the board, they were more likely to outperform their peers who didn't have that same complement. You know, there was something else about they enjoy profit margins 10 times higher than those that didn't have, 25% or more of women leadership on the board. Those are just loose statistics I remember from seeing that study. It was McKinsey that conducted it. So I think, you know, the stats are there to back that. Ultimately, when you have a high women staff complement or female staff complement, it's ultimately beneficial to your company. And, you know, I mean, it's women, like I always say, we bring a different skill set. We bring different nuances to a business. And the same thing with a man. I mean, it's not, both aren't mutually exclusive. You should have both. But to have all exclusively men and they're just driving the decisions, they tend to sort of not see things in the way that we do, nor do we see things in the way that they do, which is why it's complementary to have an equal sort of balance of both. And, you know, like I said, you know, people can refer to that McKinsey study or many others that have been done in this space to show that when women are in leadership positions or, you know, make up a huge complement of your board, your company just tends to do better than your peer who does not have the same statistics.
Okay, thank you very much for the answer. So we noticed that despite women's reliability in repaying loans, there's still discrimination in loan, like in accessing loans for women, and also in interest rates. Some loan companies, some traditional banks, they get women to pay higher interest than their male counterparts. So what do you think is responsible for this?
Oh God, even just hearing that makes me so annoyed. Makes me so annoyed. I think it should be illegal, you know, to engage in such practices. But it's also very disheartening because, again, women are really the engines of society. You know, if you go to markets, it's, you know, women were like the Schaebels or the Mitchell stands in Germany. It's like women are the cogs that keep the entire machine kind of running, you know, and to offer them loans and give them usurious rates or above men, I think it's just, it should be illegal, and I think it's a disgrace. And I think it's a massive pity as well, because as you said, statistics show that women are more likely to pay back and pay on time than a man is. Women are just a lot more responsible with their money. To, even to sort of bring it home, I think when I look at myself and my co-male directors, for example, I'm always about saving monthly, putting money aside for myself, for my son's education, even though he's still very young. I'm very sort of prudent in that manner. I believe in building small building blocks, whereas my male counterparts, they're like, no, I have X amount of money. I'm going to just throw it into this business. You know, men are very sort of, they're very daring and adventurous. They don't sort of think about the smaller components, whereas women are a bit more, they plan a lot more in that way. So I think that it's a pity and it's disgraceful that any company would engage in the practices that you're speaking of, when actually we should be giving women preferential rates even, because we're already, our access to financing, if you look at the statistics, is already so minimal compared with that of men, that the few that can even then get the financing, you know, look at what some financial institutions are doing. And yeah, it's disheartening, to say the least.
I think one of the reasons why that exists, why women pay higher rates after they've collected a loan, is because the society or some set of people think that, well, women do not have what to use money for, and they see men or husbands as breadwinners. And we had, the world has changed. Things have evolved. And we're saying, you know what, in most households now, we have co-breadwinners. The man is providing, so is the woman. So, but because of what is a woman using her money for? So if you loan a woman money and you collect a higher interest, you wouldn't know that's a man, because he has a lot to do. He's paying rent, he's doing this, he's doing that. That's, the whole system is deeply rooted in gender inequality, and it's really, 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 really unfair to women.
Yes, and it's so, like, and it's really, it's very concerning, because we have studies to show that women pay back, and they pay back on time. And so why wouldn't you want to give people like that more money? It's like a very bad business decision for you as a company to even do that. So and that's why I understand all these microfinance banks who target just women. Like, yes, because they always get their money back. So it's really a bad decision for
people. This is why you need women in positions of leadership and power, because imagine both of you were then sitting on a board of a company that was engaging in such practices. You would then be the voice of reason to say, hey, well, listen, guys, according to statistics, here you go. You know, so this is why we need more women steering the ship, so that these malpractices, you know, are diminished.
I agree. We have to dismantle it. So Rua, tell us, how can women enhance their financial literacy, particularly in budgeting, loan, savings, and investment? Are there specific tools or resources that you recommend?
Well, first of all, I say come to the pink room. you know, no, but seriously, I think attend forums by people who maybe are in positions that you want to be in, or people that, you know, speak up on the matters that are relevant to you. And again, that's why we do the pink room, because we talk about things like that, you know, budgeting, investing, all of that good stuff, financial well-being, financial literacy. I think in this day and age of social media, I would say be very careful in taking advice from you know, financial gurus on social media. Some of them are very good, but again, some have discovered that, you know, eyeballs and likes is the place to be, and they don't have the pedigree or no sort of history of working in the financial services space, but, you know, for clicks and likes, they go on and they go on Google and they learn off Google, and then they come on social media and give advice, and a lot of them don't take the advice that they actually dish out as well. So I'd say just be wary of, you know, taking advice from a social media financial advisor would be one of them. Attend forums, network a lot. And, you know, there are many courses that you can do. Udemy, for example, has courses for as little as $5 on financial literacy. Do one, upskill yourself. And then also don't be put off. I think a lot of people have this misconception. Certainly this was what I saw from my pink room survey, was that people think, okay, I'll start saving once I start earning 100K a month, for example. Right, because right now I'm only earning 45 and it's not enough to even put aside. But, you know, one, the power of compound interest, and two, the power of time. You know, I started saving from my son when I was expecting him, not even when he was born, from the time I was expecting, because I recognize that even if I can put aside $10 a month for my son, by the time he's 18, the power of compound interest, you know, and just time means that my son could be a millionaire by the time he's in his 30s, if I'm putting aside just $50 a month from the time that, you know, I was expecting him. And a lot of people think, okay, well, you're telling me I can actually be a millionaire in my lifetime, but my child can be? Absolutely. Even if you're not a millionaire yourself. Just these small changes in behavior. So I think my advice is, no matter how little your income is, it doesn't matter. Just start with, teach yourself that discipline, that even if it's 500 naira I'm going to put aside, you'll be so surprised how quickly it starts to add up and starts to build up. And I think, you know, there's something that people say about habit. And I made a note of it somewhere, and I'm going to read it out. So they said, habit is strengthened through repeated performance and association with reward. And I think that your reward in that is that you start to see your savings grow. And so it strengthens that habit. So no matter how little you start off with, the key is just to start. You pointed out that a lot of institutions now lend to women. In the other way, a lot of them now have accounts tailored to women and their needs. A lot of major banks do that now. Open yourself a savings account and start putting a bit of money aside and getting to that discipline. And then the onus on you as well is to ensure that you learn. So go out and seek knowledge. Attend these forums. There's so many. There's Her Economy. There's, you know, well, now the Pink Room. There's so many women who have, you know, the knowledge in the areas that you're trying to learn about, and just go and sit and listen to these women talk. Don't be afraid to reach out on LinkedIn or Instagram. I always respond to every single message I receive, and I do it personally, as opposed to my social media manager. But just, you know, go out and seek knowledge, and don't be afraid. Nothing is too small to begin, and just equip yourself with the knowledge, you know.
I have a question. You know, if you're talking to a young lady, for example, who says, oh, I want to save, I have the intentions of saving, but I'm in a society where people tell me, why do you need to save when you have a husband that is going to take care of you and your needs? How do you respond to that?
I tell her, you don't have a mumu tattooed across your forehead. What are you doing? No, I mean, I'm just joking. I say to her, look, Life happens. Life comes at you, right? Tomorrow is not promised. I mean, we all know this, right? It's imprudent to rely on another person for your sort of destiny. I understand that, yes, your husband may take care of you, but, you know, consider yourself, if you have children, also consider your children, because tomorrow's not guaranteed. In the event of his demise, what do you then do? You know, customary laws here in Nigeria and Igbo land, they'll come and take everything away from you, you know? So you can't just rely on your husband and, you know, his income and him taking care of you and paying for your hair or your nails. You know, just be smart and squirrel aside something for yourself. And, you know, I promise you, you'll thank me later. You know, so I just ask them to really just rethink that decision, because it's not wise. And you don't have to disclose too, you know. So if it's like your mother-in-law or even your own mother telling you, but why are you working? My son is taking care of you, or your husband is taking care of you. Stop disclosing then, because you're getting negative feedback, right? Stop disclosing. And I'm not saying go start lying, no, but just be smart and surround yourself with people who have the same sort of missions as you, because it's easy to get dissuaded if, you know, all the women that you are telling, yeah, but I didn't say it. My husband took care of me, put all my children through school, blah, 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 blah. Stop telling these women your business and just do what feels intrinsically right for you and what you know is right for yourself and your children. Stop disclosing to ignoramuses.
I completely agree.
Or ignoramai, I guess would be the plural. I don't know. Ignoramuses.
Okay, so how what exact tools for women to actually explore for saving? Do you have exact tools that you tell women to use when they come to you for savings advice, for investment? How should they save? Should they, well, invest in real estate, invest in companies? How do they ensure that they have financial independence?
Sure. So I think for me, you know, I grew up in the UK, so I'm fortunate enough to have that additional angle to my money journey. So I'll answer your question in two parts. I think that if you have exposure offshore to a different jurisdiction, then, you know, diversify your assets and have some. I mean, we've all seen what happened with the Naira recently, and the cost of, you know, inflation has surged, etc. Naira has depreciated, you know, 233% in the past 12 months. So I think if you have options offshore to diversify, then you should definitely utilize those and have some hard currency savings. So that would be one piece of advice. And then if you're purely Nigeria facing, there are many options open to you. So, you know, shameless plug again, but Chapel Hill Denim, we have an app called Invest In. So there you can just, if you're not savvy at all about investments, we have different portfolios that you can pick from. You put your money in and, you know, every month you maybe just subscribe 100 naira, 1,000 naira to 10,000, and it invests that for you. So there are many sort of, the app's called Invest Niger. So there are many tools depending on what your appetite is. But I'd say for somebody who's just starting, perhaps stick with less risky assets so that you don't get burned. Because during COVID, a lot of people thought, woke up and decided they were investors and indulged in the meme stocks. And a lot of people lost a lot of money on, you know, the likes of Zoom, etc., because they woke up and decided they were traders, right? And because everybody said these were popular names, people were buying. So if you're just starting off and you actually don't understand the underlying instruments that you're investing in, ETFs, exchange-traded funds, which are like sort of a basket of instruments, is a good way to go, like the S&P 500 ETF. And the domestic side, you know, T-bills are quite safe. I highly doubt the Nigerian government is going to default on paying you back your coupon. So that's also a good way to go. And then you can buy these instruments through, like I said, apps like Chapel Hill Denims, Invest Niger. If you want to go into real estate, I don't personally own real estate here. So I'm always reluctant to advise on things that I haven't personally put my money into, because I find that real estate here can be very illiquid. And you then want to sell off, it can be tough to sell. But there are things like REITs, so real estate investment trusts, and actually Chapel Hill started the first one. So what that means is that they buy a pool of real estate assets, and you as an investor, you put in, say, 1,000 naira, and you get a unit of that, and they pay you monthly dividends when they get rent from all those assets, and it's listed on the stock exchange, so you can enter and exit at any time. So that's also an interesting way to get into the real estate market if you don't have enough to buy a house or to buy land, for example. But again, when it comes to real estate in Nigeria, because I don't own assets, I'm reluctant to give advice where I haven't personally put my own money, but I have in REITs, which is why I'll speak to REITs. But there are many ways you can start.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much. That was a very insightful and robust answer, because for our listeners to be able to actually take steps after listening to this episode. So thank you very much.
Rewa, research indicates a correlation between female breadwinners and increase in domestic violence and emotional abuse. Why do you believe this occurs?
Because men have coconut head. And so I can't stand men. I'm just joking. But no, look, I think that men, you know, it's funny because outwardly they look like Tarzan. You know, they're so outwardly strong. But, you know, emotionally, men are incredibly fragile. They are very fragile. Their egos are so fragile. And, you know, when a man has a wife and people are admiring his wife and saying, oh, she's so successful, she's this, she's that, they can't take it, you know. And I think it's a primal thing, because it's like, you, Tarzan, me, Jane, I go out and hunt, I bring it home, you skin the deer or whatever it is, right? Some men are so insecure and their egos are so fragile that they cannot see the assets in a woman who is a force to be reckoned with in her field. And that's why the only way that they can then exercise their power is by, you know, going down to their fists, right? And exerting their power in the physical sense, because men typically tend to be physically stronger. And I think it's pathetic. It is absolutely pathetic. So that's my thinking. I think it's insecurity. I think it's fragility. And I think it's a lack of confidence in who they are themselves.
That actually makes sense, like toxic masculinity.
Yes. And so many men have refused to practice healthy or positive masculinity. It's like they are sticking to toxic, and we can't talk about toxic masculinity without talking about all forms of abuse.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, why abuse a person for fulfilling her purpose in life? Why abuse a person for going out and actually uplifting your entire household? Why punish a person for that? Isn't that a good thing to do? But I suppose it makes them feel powerless, and you don't even want to be with a person like that.
yes, that is so true. You don't even want to be with a person like that. Yes. So, according to Forbes, venture capitalist firms, VC firms, with at least one female investing partner are twice as likely to fund female founders and three times more likely to fund companies with female CEOs than VC firms with an all-male partners. What are your thoughts on this?
Again, you see, I'm sounding a bit like a parrot or a broken record now, but this is why we need women steering some ships, right? Because then they are decision makers and they can then allocate capital accordingly. You know, it's if a woman was at the helm or had a seat at the table, she would be able to advise accordingly, you know. And again, I just think it's such a disgrace. I mean, for God's sake, half the population is female. You know, why are we suppressing? It's just so incredible to me that in this day and age, we are still so archaic in our thinking. You know, but it's a pity. But again, it ties into, you know, women having a seat at the table. And, you know, another thing I can sometimes observe is that when a woman then makes it into a position of power, she's then reluctant to pull up someone younger behind her, which is also a pity too, you know, because why? You know, it's such a crabs in the bucket mentality. You know, uplift others, because when a community rises, everybody rises. But if you're rising in a silo, no person can exist as an island. And so I also don't like that myopic sense of thinking. You know, for me, I like I say, I always respond to all my messages, and I have a few mentees. I always make time out to help women who are coming behind me who seek out my advice. I always make time to do it because I wish somebody would have done it for me, and so I make it my duty to always be responsive and help. But in terms of this Forbes study, and again, you know, it's also doubly disgraceful that this happens in developed markets like the US or the UK, who are meant to be, you know, sort of more at the leading edge of these things. So I think that's changing though, and I'm happy to see that change, you know.
Yeah, fantastic. So Rewa, tell us, how can women navigate financial decisions in their romantic relationships and marriages while maintaining independence and avoiding financial abuse?
Well, take what I say with a pinch of salt, because your girl here is divorced, so maybe I'm the one with coconut head, right? Maybe I don't hear words. But I mean, all jokes aside, I think always be respectful. So even if you do earn more than your husband, don't lord it over him. Don't emasculate him as a result of, you know, your own sort of financial prowess. That's number one. Always be respectful. And I mean this to both parties. I think having those conversations up front is very important. You know, not years down the line and then both of you are trying to think of what works best in your family dynamic. I think if you are just beginning to date somebody or you're about to be married, ensure that both of you are very clear, or as clear as you can be. Obviously, life changes, but both be as clear as you can be about what your perceived roles and responsibilities are going to be, how you intend on managing your finances, because that can spare a lot of heartache in the long run. And I think if you're already in it and you find yourself in this situation, and maybe you are facing financial abuse, gosh, it's a really tough one. But I would say that as a woman then, get yourself a network of people who are supportive and try to start to educate yourself on how to become financially empowered. You know, but again, within reason and within respectful reason. Attending women-led sort of forums, like the Pink Room, or some of my other counterparts have great, you know, financial well-being events. Attend some of those. And, you know, you can operate with transparency as long as it's safe for you to do so, or, you know, conceal it, but not in a harmful way. But if you are married and you find that you're totally powerless in your situation, then it's a tough place to be in, but take heart that it doesn't matter. You know this now, and knowing it is the first step, and just start to try to educate yourself in the little way that you can, and start to try to put something aside for yourself. Because I kid you not, even if you have savings of 100K, it can feel really empowering, because then you feel like, okay, so even if there's something I need to do, I have my own little pot of money that I can take and go and do something with. You know, just taking action, no matter how small, and small is how we all perceive it to be, but it's so incredibly empowering. Just taking action and getting yourself knowledge. Knowledge isn't power. It's actually the utility of knowledge that's power. So just take those small steps to try to kind of educate yourself and surround yourself with a network that's equally as supportive, you know? But be respectful to your spouse. Obviously, both should always be respectful to one another.
Thank you very much for that. So we have one more question for you. But before we get into that, so you mentioned that the Pink Room is a quarterly event, so which means that this is March, it's supposed to have an event. So can you tell us more about the event so we can, maybe our listeners can come to learn one of
your things?
Yes, so please just tell us more about the event.
Sure. So it's something that I do in conjunction with the Women International, which is a great network of women, and they have a lot of sessions, you know, about financial well-being, emotional well-being, health, you know, women's problems. You know, if maybe if you're trying to get pregnant and you want to do IVF, they have so many sessions on a range of topics affecting the lives of women. So it's something I do in conjunction with them. The next session is on the 24th of March, which is on a Sunday. And if you go on the pinkroomng.com, you can sort of sign up for that and attend. It's free for people to attend. And again, during that session, you know, we sort of, or I talk about, you know, the macroeconomic landscape. I talk about headlines in the economy and how, what this means for you in your individual capacity, how you should navigate the coming months, depending on your situation. But aside from that, we also have other speakers. So this time we have a lady called Natasha Matani. She's incredible. And she'll be talking about the psychology of money, because it'll surprise you how, you know, some people in her community, they're married to millionaires, and maybe even in her, the women in their right, they're millionaires, and I'm talking in USD. But yet these women are still so scared to take any step without their husband. And it, so that's why I say it's like the psychology of money, because your socioeconomic background, how you grew up, what your parents told you, what your mother told you about money, you actually just don't realize how much it comes to bear in current day and your relationship with money. It all stems from, you know, when you were growing up, what did you witness? What was told to you? What were you told by your in-laws? What do societal norms tell you to do? And all of these things impact the way you treat money, the way you go about handling your money. So this session is going to be incredible, because she will be talking about the psychology of money and trying to get people to open up their minds beyond what they've been told is the right way to think. And I mean, maybe there's no right or wrong, depending on how you feel, but just to be more open-minded in how your relationship with money. And then I then talk about hard numbers, what you should be considering, how you should navigate the space. So it'll be an incredible session. I'm really looking forward to it, you know. And it's also light touch. So it's not like you're going to come in and say, oh my God, she's talking about inflation and you know, the asymmetric corridor, and I don't know what this means to me. Yes, I talk about those things, but I also break it down in a way that's palatable and understandable for even somebody like my son to understand, you know.
You know, speaking of psychology of money, when in conversations with women and girls, you hear, oh, I want to be with a rich man. I want to be with a rich man. That's because so many women think that when or if they end up with a rich man, they're going to have access to money. Until so many marry and they're like, oh, you, but you may have,
you get there.
And you have, so it's like, it looks like you're balling. Look, you have drivers, you go shopping, but you do not have access to money. Everything is being paid for. You just need the driver to take you from place to place, as against you having to spend or pay for items. So you cannot even save out of, there's nothing to save from, because everything is paid for. You just need a driver to take you to the store, to make your hair, to the spa, your nails, as against, oh, you're paying for, you can't even tip someone.
Yeah. Look, I tell you, Nigeria is a lot of smoke and mirrors, right? Never look at somebody externally or on social media and envy or desire their lives, because I promise you, the things that happen behind closed doors, you'd be shocked. You'd be so shocked. There's so many incidences of women who are perceived to be balling, right? But their cash balance is zero, because the smallest thing, even if they want to buy akara for breakfast, they have to ask the man for money, right? Because in their own bank, they have nothing. And maybe they don't work. Another thing is, please always have a job. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but Mike, for God's sake, please have a job and be a good role model for your child, right? So being a housewife, that's a whole other thing. But please just engage in some form of enterprise, no matter how small. So sidebar, right? That's something else. But, you know, I say this to say you see a lot of women and, you know, yeah, they've married rich men. But the reality behind the scenes, like you both talked about, is very different. Even look at a global scale. Look at Diddy and Cassie, right? She was dating a billionaire, right? And she left him with nothing because he paid for absolutely everything. And when she left him, he took everything away again, you know? So don't look at somebody else and envy their position. Yeah, marrying a rich man might make you comfortable, you know, it might make you comfortable, but always be prudent. Always still have your own. Always engage in enterprise. Do not allow yourself to be sucked into this thing of, well, he handles everything, therefore I don't need to ever worry about where our next money is coming from, how we're going to pay for this. Just be smart about how you navigate it. You know, a rich man is not everything. I promise you that. It comes with its own challenges.
All right. Thank you for that. So lastly, we have young female listeners who are eager to know what has helped you in your career and financial development over the years. So could you leave us with something?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things have helped me. Watching my mom grow up, you know, she was a single mother to us. And so the lady was juggling jobs like the most skilled juggler you've ever seen. And it wasn't easy, but I say that to say I grew up with a mother who was working multiple jobs to support her children, right? And so very early on, I learned the importance of work ethic. So like I said, I've been working since I was 16 and I haven't stopped since then. So I think having a good role model who didn't look to anybody for handouts, right? She worked very hard. So that's one of the things, having a good role model and having very strong work ethic. Nobody's coming to save you. Right? Nobody's going to riding on a horse and going to come and save you. So just bootstrap and get it done. Right? So I think number one, role model, number two, working hard. And then I think the other thing that has helped me is I network like a crazy person. Right? And I love to learn from people. So I've spoken about the lady who will be speaking at the Pink Room, Natasha. A lot of my friends, I surround myself with women who have something that I want, or not want, but something I admire is the better way to put it. So I admire all my friends for different things. And when I hang around with intelligent women, I learn and I better myself in the process. I don't have friends who aren't engaged in some form of enterprise because we would have nothing to talk about and I'd be very impatient. So I surround myself with people who, you don't have to be the next Kathy Wood. You don't have to be the L'Oreal lady, the Betancourt. You don't have to be that. But in anything that you're doing, if you have excellence in an area, I want to be your friend because that thing, I want to learn about it. I want to learn from you about how you're doing that thing. So I think that's another thing. Your network is so important. And then another thing that's massively helped me is being diverse. So, you know, yes, I'm at Chapel Hill, but I'm also a visual artist. And I think having multiple sources that support my livelihood has been instrumental in my journey, you know, because when one is not doing so well, the other keeps me afloat. And when this one is not doing so well, the other keeps me afloat. So it's about being adaptable, being flexible. And every human is born with an internal star, right? So find what your star is and work at it. And if you know how to crochet, if you know how to knit, but you also have a job, I really encourage you to, that passion or whatever that thing is that you can do better than other people, continuously hone your craft because that could be another income source for you. So I guess in summary, what I'm trying to say is identify ways that you can diversify avenues for success for yourself and try and do each of them very well. And I think you'll find that really helps you as well, you know. So sorry, long-winded way, but those would be my pieces of advice.
That's fantastic. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And if you want to hear more from Riwa on financial literacy, she's having the Pink Room on 21st of March. So you can just just Google the Pink Room. You'll see how to register. And so you can listen to her and be more financially independent. So thank you so much, Riwa. Thank you for sharing your profound. Oh, yeah, please go ahead. You want to say something?
I'm just going to say thank you both. You know, I want to say, I mean, I know you've kind of asked me a lot of questions, but I also want to just applaud the work that you're doing because I think that what you do is so vital, you know, disseminating information to, you know, your women listeners or men, you know, let's not be exclusive, right? But I think that the work that you're doing is so important. I think we need more of this. So I'm really honored to be here and I'm proud of the work that you both are doing. And I think, you know, just please don't stop and please keep it up, because you'll be surprised at how many lives you touch and change with the work that you do. So, yeah. Thank you for, you know, having me on here.
Thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your insights with us. And we're really glad to have had you on this podcast.
To our listeners, we hope today's episode has enriched you with knowledge and motivated you to pursue your financial and professional goals with confidence. Remember, empowerment starts with education.
Yes, 100%.
So stay tuned for more inspiring episodes of The Content Narrative. You can also subscribe and follow us on Instagram at The Counter Narrative, on Twitter at @thecn_podcast, and on TikTok at The Counter Narrative. Keep in touch with us. If you have questions, you can always ask us. Our DMs are open.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we thank you so much, everybody, and goodbye. It was nice to have this conversation. Bye, everyone.